From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Chad Beater.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
Welcome to Defrag Tools. Well, this is episode 6.
Yeah.
Will it ever end?
Well, we've got episode 7 coming up.
Okay. Well, then I guess it won't end yet. So what are we talking about today?
This week is disc. We're going to go over the disc counters.
Cool.
And, I don't know, it's nothing more complex than that, really. Bring up a main command prompt. If you look back on the show notes from the previous episodes and also the current one, you can download the script files I've been giving out. And so the one we're going to be doing today is this one. So much like the other ones, we always have proc thread on the front for process and thread reasons,
yeah.
Loader for module reasons, and then we get into the actual guts. So there's disk IO and disk IO init. Disk IO is kind of obvious, it's just the stats. Init's the kind of the cool one. It'll actually give you the ability to have stacks and that type of data, so it can tell you who made the disk call mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And also it gives you the timings, and we talked about this in one of the episodes, about you request a disk request, but it doesn't mean that the disk actually serviced it then, because you're in a queue. And then in this case, there's three stacks that you can get when you ask for a read, when you ask for a write, and when you ask for a flush. So even though they're all on the init, we actually can segment it down. And that's just normal buffering. So let's capture one of these. And then I'm just going to copy some files on my SSD. Copy them to themselves. And yeah, that'll do. And stop. Stopping. So doing that merge stuff that's important. Stopping. There we go.
Riveting TV.
Yes.
There it is.
And now I have to load it up.
It's like Office Space,
also,
right?
Also takes away. It's true.
So we don't get many graphs because we don't have many keywords. We've just got roughly this information about the threads and the images, as always, under the system activity area. And then in this one, we just get the disk usage area. And once again, much like the CPU and everything else, it's shown in multiple different ways. It's not that there's multiple pieces of data, it's just pivoting it different ways. If we drag that on, I don't think I've pointed this out, but if you drop these down, it's the same thing as choosing from the graph on the left, right? It'll just toggle between the ones you had. So what you tend to do in the disk space is you want to look at how much the disk is being slammed, right? And so utilization by disk is the key one. So in this case, disk 1 and 2 made traffic. Disk 0 didn't. This has got three drives in it. So currently there's a spinning hard drive, which is like the main first drive. Then there's my SSD, and then there's a VHD. And so to actually work out what those are, if you expand it, you're not going to get a name or anything. So there's actually a part we haven't shown you yet under trace, which is system configuration. And what this will tell you is, you know, how the trace was made, how big it was, information about the system, you know, the information about the traces. And then in this case, which the one we care about is information about storage. So disk number 0 is, as I said, this Toshiba physical drive. Disk number 1 is an Intel SSD. And disk number 2 is a virtual disk. This machine is VHD booted on the SSD. So the operating system, what would be C drive, is actually disk 2 in this case. And so there was actually no traffic on the physical hard drive, which in this OS, because of the way it's booted, looks like E drive.
And these are the same disk numbers you would see in like disk management, correct?
So. And I think, I think you also get all the information about, you know, sector size and all that stuff. So you have your 4K disks and all that type of information. So really a nice quick way of working out, you know, how big a drive is, you know, how many gigs it's got, all that type of stuff.
Disk queue length?
So the disk queue length data is per disk, and you don't see it up here because it translates over time.
And you talked about disk queue length on a previous show, I think, talking about the way that when that gets too high, it's an indication the disk is oversaturated.
Yeah, it's things that aren't being serviced, right? And there's a queue of work to do. And as soon as you start waiting for the disk, you know, it's a bad thing, you know. And if you looked at wait analysis, you would see, you know, long waits because you're waiting on disk. And with the wait thread, you'd see, hey, I'm waiting for this disk request. And the readying thread, which is the one that did the release and finalized the disk, you would see it would be a disk-based thread that said, I finished this I.O. for you. So, the disk queue length is actually a very interesting thing because it's the number one thing we tell anybody to look at in Performance Monitor and anything else, and it's not a column in WPA. When you open up the editor, even if you look at the columns that you can pull in, they're still not there. It's actually one of those things you actually have to open up XPerf View. We'll use it. We'll look at this later as well in this tool. If we look at one of the disk graphs, and then look at the table. Was it the right one? Where are we? Am I on the right graph? Or am I on the wrong graph? We need the disk
utilization.
This one. Detail graph. Sorry. And then it's in here. Why isn't that data there? Oh, I'm on the wrong drive, that's why. We'll get back to this in a sec, but it is here. Disk queue length is right there. There's the queue depth at the time of init. So as in when you ask for it. So let's go through WPA first, and then we'll fall back to XPerf to do that type of analysis. One of the things you... Man, that's a lot of screens. One of the things you want to do first when you're looking at disk queue is just to work out how much it's saturated, right? I was copying to myself, so it's not surprising to see that I'm saturated because it should be reading and writing as fast as you can. And so as you can see here, it's close to 100%.
Was this on an SSD that you were doing this?
Yeah. It doesn't mean it's not going fast. Yeah. It's just it was saturating the disk controller, saying...
Yeah. When you're thinking about this kind of thing, you do have to keep in mind what is the underlying storage technology. Because, for example, there's still going to be a performance hit on an SSD when you're reading and writing from different parts of the disk, but it's not as big a hit as on a physical hard drive where the head has to physically move.
Yeah.
And how does this change if you're using different flavors of RAID?
This is the thing about Windows and storage. It doesn't really know about anything past the disk controller. So we're not talking about software RAID or anything like that where it's Windows responsibility. We're talking about hardware RAID where you give it into some nice big adapter card or something.
Yeah.
Once you talk to that device, it tells you it has one disk and it has cylinders. And actually, let's see if I can get this to pivot in a way that kind of gives you the best idea of what we're talking about. And XPerf does this really easily. Yeah. But what you need to do is you need to grab the min offset one and put it on under the blue line. So the min offset is the cylinder. So we access hard drives in cylinders.
The LBA or the, it's the logical block.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, LBA now, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like the distance into the disk. And so if you have a 200 gig drive, you'll see numbers between 0 and 200 gig. Mm-hmm. Minimum offset is the start of the write to, and then based on how big the read is, the max will be longer than that. So by adding in this column, roughly you've got the disk and the offset of the operation that we're on, i.e. where the head is.
Right.
Now, this is where a disk controller kind of breaks down. So in this case, we can see that on disk one, let's get this, do more of a graphy view, it was going from the top of the disk down here, and so it was going all over the place. Now, of course, this is exactly where you need to know about what the drive is and what disk controller is. SSDs couldn't care less, right? Because it doesn't matter what sync time is.
There's no physical mechanism to move.
Yeah, with hard drive heads, it matters. But it doesn't matter if you've got a disk controller in the way. So if you ask a disk controller to go between X and Y, and a classic example is a mirror, so you've got two copies of the data where two independent disk heads can track. And what the disk controller will do on a read is it will service one read on this one and then get this up, the second head to go do a second read at the same time, which is why reading from a mirror set is so much faster because you have twice the read capacity on the disk.
Yeah.
Right. So it's all abstracted away by the RAID controller. So if you're seeing a lot of head movement on a disk that's actually backed by a hardware RAID, It may be a problem, or it may not necessarily be as big of a problem, just depending on the particular situation.
Yeah, it's what we're asking it to do, whether actually what we see on the screen is what we think is a linear operation of offsets translates to a physical head, which with a normal hard drive it does.
But this is actually a very good thing to look at in cases where you are seeing really bad disk performance. I've had cases in the past where a particular operation, say during boot or something, takes a really long time, and you get in here and look at this, and you know, if you're on a physical, a traditional spinning hard disk, and you'll see the reads coming, you know, interspersed between one section of the disk and another section way far away, and that the we call it thrashing. The head is actually thrashing during boot, and that can just kill your disk performance.
But does the controller card matter, or the amount of memory that's on the card?
It definitely does, because you can. We assume that we have to go to the head for the read, and it may be serviced faster than that because the actual drive has cache.
Yeah.
There's actually two things that affect this. A, there's the cache, of course. Mm-hmm. So what happens is when you do a read, let's say you ask for 1K, most drives will do a bigger read than that no matter what. They'll read, I'm not sure what it is, but it's...
They already have to move the thing there, so it doesn't cost that much extra to just give you more data.
Yeah, so they read more than that, and they put the whole thing in their cache. So if you come then along and say, hey, give me the next 1K, what's in their memory rather than... And then having to read it to the disk.
Yeah.
Now, even your standard, you know, Seagate, Western Digital, Toshiba, whatever, physical hard drives, they come with, I think, 8 meg these days, or even 32 meg on them. Mm-hmm. It's not a small amount. Now, when you have big RAID systems in servers, well, they come with gigs on the actual RAID controller. And then when you're looking at things like SANs, or not SANs, but big direct-attached storage where you have big racks, I mean, they can have a huge amount of cache on them. And this is where actually the battery backup matters. So we assume that there's nothing between us and the disk for the way Windows is configured by default, which means that when we do a write, we wait for the disk to tell us that it physically finished, right? Where were the reads kind of relevant. What you can say is, well, if there's a cache in the middle that's going to flush it out at an indeterminate time later, you can configure Windows to say, I do or do not trust that cache is backed up by battery. So when power is lost, we can say, put it into there, don't tell me when you write it, I trust it, then I'm gone, which is how big servers run. And then we trust that the battery backup of that memory on that cache controller is still going to run the disk after we've lost power, right, and flush it out. And so, and that's what the like a removable drive is like. There's a little checkbox that says, allow write caching, right, on the disk properties. Yeah. And actually, I probably can show that. So under, is it under here? Is it under here? Where
can't
is it?
I can't quite remember.
Yeah, I can't remember. There's a checkbox somewhere. I can't remember where it is. Yeah. But where you can say whether you do or don't trust it. So when you plug in a USB stick or a USB drive, it assumes that that doesn't have battery backup.
Yeah.
And it will not release the write or the read until the drive has confirmed that it's flushed it to disk. So if you can increase a bit of performance by turning that on, but you're at the risk of power.
And
power
so loss. If I build a crazy RAID out of SSDs at home, does the cache, does it matter? I mean, is that just going to slow it down, or does it have a benefit?
Cache is always faster, right? I mean, memory is always going to be faster than moving a physical head. Now, this is becoming less of a story with SSDs, and also with Ready Boost is a really good example of this, right? Yeah. It's still faster to talk to a USB stick than a rotating media inside your laptop, right? It's the same argument with a RAID set. It's still faster to talk to the cache on the RAID controller than the RAID disks themselves. Now, obviously, if you have more and more drives that are able to service the thing at the same time, with RAID 5, two out of the set will always be able to read it. Mirror set, always, obviously, one-to-one. Mm-hmm. You can always bring up your read speed. Mirroring is slow on writes because you've got to write it twice. Mm-hmm. But you actually got to synchronize the heads that they both have to be stop doing work and then do the writes together. And so that's why a write speed on mirror is terrible, right? And why we say if you're doing a big server like Exchange or SQL and those type of things, always use RAID 5 because it balances redundancy with write performance. And when you get up into Exchange 2010, 2013, the software itself, the Exchange architecture, says that you actually don't even do mirroring anymore. The Exchange itself is redundant. and you don't you go back to using one disk.
I think the key to keep in mind, though, is that all of this stuff that we're talking about in terms of, you know, the underlying physical storage and what kind of optimizations it has around cache, things like that, is all abstracted away from the operating system. So when you go and look at a chart here in WPA or XPerf, you don't really see any of that. You see we did a write and it took this long, yeah. Or this is what the controller told us how long it took. Mm. It may be that the controller told us the write was done, but the controller went and cached that in its battery back cache and wrote it out sometime later. We don't really have the ability to see that because that's all done at the hardware level.
Mm-hmm. So as far as data is concerned, this isn't a standard view, this min-offset one, but if you can just remember disk and min-offset and get rid of every other column, roughly you've got your head position, assuming none of that disk controller stuff's affecting you. If you just open XPerf and then right-click on a disk graph. Now, I'm not going to go into the details of it because it's not really important, but the summary table in XPerf is different to the detail table. They actually fork off the data into two different ways of looking at disk. The one that you care about is actually in the detail graph. You actually go from any of the disk graphs to the detail graph and then look at the summary table, right? Which is the only one you have to remember. Everything else, do it in WPA. In XPerf, you actually have to choose a disk, which I forgot to do before. So here's the Intel one, and then here's the VHD. So what you're seeing here with all these data points is the same thing as I was showing in WPA. And so you can see that I was going up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down.
Yeah, right? You can see a few places there where you were actually thrashing.
So if I actually zoom to here, one of these will be the read, probably. This one is the read. You can see that right on top of the tooltip. And you can see how we've got the stack of the read. We can see the exact person who asked for that. Now, I haven't resolved symbols in here yet, but you would get all the function names. And then at the bottom, there's the write. Yeah. I have seen a case where people were complaining about disk performance. And so this is exactly what I asked them to gather. And this is exactly what I saw. The difference was, well, the top one was a page file and the bottom one was a page file. And you go, well, why is it like that? Well, what you can see here on the left, and you can see this in WPA as well, is the partitions. What they've done is had one physical disk, and it was just one disk, no RAID or anything, and they had partitioned it into C and D drive. And they had put a page file on C and D drive. Right? And so they were doing some operation that was heavy on memory, and literally the disk was going, C drive page file, D drive page file, C drive page file, D drive page file.
And it was really recommended for performance.
It was killer. Absolutely, it was killing the performance.
If you're going to have multiple page files, ideally you want them on separate physical disks.
Yeah.
Well, again, with an SSD, it doesn't matter so much.
Yeah.
Right? But for physical spinning media.
Yeah, so bad idea to partition your disks. So the trick with XPerf is you went from the detail graph, which is this one, and then you go into summary table. And then you get to see your data. And then we've got queue length. And I'll get back to queue length in a sec, as I said. So the graphs you want to see in here is just utilization by disk. That's a bit weird. Utilization. All right. Why is it doing that? Why am I losing all my columns? Is it demo god day today? Did I not pray to it?
Apparently.
I'll do it my own way. So roughly, this is the same graph with priority thrown onto it. So I'm just going to get rid of the priority column, and I'll get back to the same thing. So what you want to know is how long operations took and whether your system is or is not under stress. And the way you do that is you futz around with the column definitions. So as I said, there's two numbers that are in play here. The time that the IO request took itself and the time on the disk. And let's say that, you know, the disk is in the middle and it's a quarter and the rest of it's, you know, the one. IO time is big and then disk time is small. That means the disk was fast, you're just saturating the disk. If the disk time is wide, you know, wide like the IO, it means the disk subsystem is slow, right? And so that's the differentiation. Now, the way that this defaults is sum. What we actually want to do is go max because we kind of want to know what the extremes are. Why can't I invalid settings? That's what? I am having... Why doesn't it like me today? Oh, weird. Anyway, we'll do it the hard way. So what we're going to do is, this is the sum. And so when we expanded it out, each individual operation is only a single one anyway. What I was going to do is do the max. And then you'd know this, these numbers at the top would show the biggest number. And so instead of saying 17 million, it would say 86. So the longest read took 86 microseconds. So 86,000 microseconds. So 86 milliseconds. And the longest write took 81, right? That was how long the request took. But on disk, the read that's associated with only took 9 milliseconds, and this one only took 6. And so if we sort by, you know, what the performance was like for the thread, that's what I/O time was like. How much this disk was being pegged is sorted by disk service time. And in this case, the worst disk service time was 62 seconds. And interestingly, it's in MSP and Eng, right? So the process that did that call held the disk for a fair long time. And what we want to do is show, we want the IO init stack. So this is the stack that, you know, why doesn't it want to do that? That's weird. Right, I'll do it this way then. It's been really prickly today. So what we can do is expand that out and load symbols. And we actually will find out who was trying to do. And when it comes down to long requests, you'll find that the file that was longest tends to be associated with antivirus. And so it's locking the I/O and saying, look, I have to scan this before I return it.
Yeah.
Right. And so it makes the I/O request longer. And then what we can do is, if we want to find out what the file was at that time, we can put the file column on. And so when it was reading this file.
So this would be a good way of finding out if maybe your problem isn't so much your disk performance itself, but maybe your antivirus slow.
Yeah, and particularly when your disk is narrow and your I/O is wide, but you have a low disk queue length, which is the other thing we're about to look at, then it's someone else and it's filters. And when we get to mini filter drivers, we will see that analysis. And not surprisingly, the one that took a long time was an XE, right? Because it actually did scan it. So the whole I/O had to pause while we scanned it. So let's look at disk queue length and why I keep on mentioning it. Summary table of this guy. Now, what we want to know with this is how deep the request was. So on this system, the queue got to 10 deep, right? And we actually have the disk distance actually on the exit as well. And so this is the queue depth at init, and there's actually a queue depth at exit. And so with only one drive, it's kind of obvious that it should be... when it went in, this guy was in the 10th, and he was the last to go out.
Yeah.
Right? So these last ones kind of make sense. I was the 5th last, 6th, 5th. But when you have a RAID set, they may not come back in an indeterminate order because the drive heads can be seeking at different rates and retrieving different things. So you may not necessarily be linear. But at least we know that, you know, we got to 10 deep, 2 times spindles, we talked about this before, a physical head movement, the head track, that's called a spindle. I don't care if it has heads on either side of a platter. We're talking about the seek operation. Mm-hmm. That number of physical drives that have that, so if you have a mirror set, it would be 2. If you have RAID 5 with say 5 drives, it would have 4 that are available. That number times 2 is your max. This thing got to 10, which means it was saturated, and as we know, it was saturated. So if we had asked the disk to do something, it would have been bad. Now, Windows had some mechanisms to make this better. We can look at the prioritization. Now, because we only did traffic seemingly for Explorer's copy and nothing else, we only have priority 3. But if you have things like multimedia, it will come in as a higher priority. If you look at Process Explorer, you can actually, Process Monitor, and looking at the file graphs, you can actually see the priority that it came in as, and you'll see that media comes in high, and you'll see that other things like antivirus will come in low, right? And the queue will adjust for the ordering.
The point being that a high priority I/O will preempt others in the disk queue if the disk is backed up.
So that's really the reason is to disk performance. You look at the I/O time, you look at the disk time. It's really important to look at disk queue length because that gives you an idea of saturation at the point in time. When I look at disk, I bring up XPerf view first. Actually, I'll do it from scratch and we can go through it. Just pay attention to this 30 seconds and you'll know how you do it. You do that, right click on a disk graph, any of those graphs have the same data, choose the drive you're worrying about the thrash on, have a quick look here, go, ooh, that's a lot of seeks, that's not good, that was my SSD, okay, I can accept that. Right click, put the disk queue on the left, and go, all right, it got to 14 deep on that disk. So the other disk we're looking at was 10 deep. And then sort by disk time, this is the sum, is this sort by then open it in WPA and sort by disk time. It's easier in WPA than in XPerf. And that's really all there is to disk analysis. I highly suggest that you do get the stacks because if you're worrying about some application freezing, right, for a while, and you see that the disk is saturated, you want to have the evidence that there was a thread in that process that was trying to do a read file or page in a DLL or something.
Well, just knowing that your disk was oversaturated doesn't really help you much unless you know who was doing it, right?
Yeah. The other thing I'll point out very quickly in here is it's kind of interesting. I didn't point it out. These red lines, they are flushes to disk. Flushes freeze the disk until the cache controller has completely said, I have got everything out. So this is configured to say, I trust the cache controller, so always reads and writes, I don't have to wait for the write, but at certain indeterminate times, we force a flush. And what this will be is NTFS saying, I must get my file system transactionally complete. Right? I want a checkpoint on NTFS. At a flush, roughly the whole thing pauses. You won't get a disk queue length on that number, you won't get a stack, it'll just be a flush. So you will get a stack, but you won't get the stats of duration and all that type of stuff. But that's what those big red lines are. So if you're seeing lots of flushes, that's also a very common reason for not having good disk performance. And that's it for disks.
Cool. All right, and that's the show for this week. If you have questions, just email us at defragtools@microsoft.com, and we'll get back to you there. Thanks for watching.
Have a good week.
Bye.